Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Are you into archaeology at all, Timory?
I love learning about different discoveries. Especially, I like to read novels, mystery novels that center around archaeologists in the Middle East and the time of Egypt. Oh, they're so fun. Amelia really? Peabody series.
Really? Yeah, okay, yeah. Awesome. I'm not familiar with those. My archaeological stories go about as far as Indiana Jones.
That's but those are good ones. Amelia Peabody's very similar, but female lead.
Okay, awesome. Archaeologists in Turkey recently discovered something pretty cool.
Absolutely. I was looking at this the other day. A picture came across. There was an underwater Byzantine basilica found in what was ancient Nicaea, right around the time of the Council of Nicaea, the very first council, back around 325. It's amazing. If you look at the pictures of this, it's a big, beautiful church right there underwater.
5 to 7 feet of water. Do we know how it happened that it came underwater, Timory?
I believe that there was some earthquake that kind of destroyed it some time ago, and it was never rebuilt, essentially. And then eventually the water ended up covering it, and it was discovered about 7 or 8 years ago. And pictures are being resurfaced because what they're hoping to do is to have essentially an underwater museum of this church. Yeah. Isn't that cool?
How's that going to work? Got to get in a little submarine. It's like one of those rides where you go and the sharks swim over you and that sort of thing. That would be pretty cool.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Our faith is so historic. I mean, you go all the way back to the Judeo-Christian roots. You go to how we can even have incredible conversations with people who know their faith and are Jewish even today. And you see just the continued hand of God in architecture and religion and the formation of people. It's phenomenal.
The history of Christianity is something that maybe culture-wide we should probably emphasize to people more.
Yes.
They tend to think of religion as something that's sort of ethereal and mysterious, and you don't really think about it, and it's not grounded in any sort of historical events. It's just something you believe in, and there's this God out there somewhere. And well, no, right?
Yes.
This is the history of Christianity and Judaism, too. It's fulfillment, right? I look at them all as one, really. Is one of God acting in time and space. Mm-hmm. It's very historical. It's very flesh and blood and
it's
stone
human.
And mortar and human. Yeah, it's very earthy. And so, yeah, I love all these archaeological discoveries. Very cool.
Well, and I love that you bring that up because it constantly reminds me of the sacraments and going to church. And we've talked about this before, but the incense, the receiving of our Lord physically in the presence of the body and blood of Christ, the transubstantiation of the wine and the bread, all these elements are appealing in a human way, in time and space, as you said, to who we are, of God accommodating, reaching down to us and saying, here, come and be with me.
Yeah, feeding us in a very physical way, like not just spiritual food. As a Protestant, I always used to think of, well, you know, the word of God is our food and we're fed spiritually. And what does it mean to, you know, the manna from heaven? And I thought of it sort of in this mystic. No, it's like he actually is feeding us, giving us strength right there
right
in the Eucharist. So beautiful and real.
You know what that reminds me of, too? So there's this church that I just love in Northern California. I was there recently. And the church, it's amazing because they have confession during every single Mass. And not only that, you could show up an hour, sometimes even an hour and a half before the Mass, hoping that the priest will show up. And guess what? The confessional line is already forming.
Wow.
And there was this time not too long ago where I was trying to go to a daily Mass, you know, weekend daily Mass. I'm kind of running in there and I'm thinking, oh, great, I'll have time to go to Mass and I'll go to confession beforehand. There were so many people in line for confession that you had to sit throughout the whole Mass. But not only that, it happens every single day at this church. And it's funny because I'm sitting here thinking, this is so annoying. We have to wait so long. And this was a few months back when I was there. And I finally realized, you know what? I think sometimes our over obsessiveness with productivity, with immediate access on our cell phones to things, that sometimes the physical presence of the church and the importance of having to wait, maybe of even having to fast an hour before Mass, these physical elements that appeal to our humanity are kind of being brushed aside and ignored, even waiting in a confessional line and the importance of it, of receiving that sacrament in person. It's being brushed aside because we're so obsessed with the immediacy of our culture right now.
Well, and that's really a grace of God, the whole waiting thing. This is something I hate in my life, I'll be honest. God is just constantly saying, Don, just wait, wait. No, I don't want to wait anymore. Yeah. I think that much of the sacramental life and the liturgical life is God saying, take some time out of that busy day and actually physically go down to that church and wait and kneel and just pause before me. And it's really a grace. Even praying the rosary, right? The fact that you have to take some time out of your day to do it is a grace of God.
So, and you know what? I don't know about you, but for me, so I grew up really struggling with fasting, especially because for those who don't know, I have an autoimmune disease, whole nother topic in and of itself, but I've struggled over the years with this, and it makes not eating food, not eating the right food and so forth really challenging. So fasting was kind of one of those things our priests agreed, you know, it's okay if you can't really fast. And so I've had to learn now that I'm better on top of how I can eat, how I can fast. And you know what? Fasting and really incorporating it into my weekly life and different times throughout the week has taught me the importance of that bodily presence and of that self-control within the bodily presence. So I want to encourage people, you know, you're struggling to sit and pray, get through your rosary, or sit through that half an hour after Mass of adoration, whatever it might be. Start fasting prayerfully. It is incredibly helpful. Speaking of fasting, women are going to have to wait to be drafted for the war. Congress has shelved plans to have women register for the draft. Did you hear about this?
No, but that sounds wonderful. Timory, don't get me started on this whole
drafting
women.
Did I just open
women.
That can up?
Drafting
did I
women?
Just open
yes.
it?
Some craziest thing.
I didn't tell you I wanted to talk
no,
about
we didn't.
It.
I didn't know. It's not on my list here, Timory. Drafting women. This is time for civil disobedience if that happens. So I'm glad. Tell me what's...
Okay, so basically, it's been shelved, any conversation about it. The Congress has said, okay, hold up. No registering for the draft. Let's put that on a backseat. I would love to hear your thoughts on this one.
Well, I'm just thinking, all right, so somebody shows up at my door and says that my, you know, 19-year-old daughter is going to have to go and fight and learn how to shoot machine guns. And no, that's not going to happen. My wife, it's not going to happen. Okay, I'm sorry. This is ridiculous.
But Don, that's sexist.
Yeah, just like John McEnroe was sexist. Did you see this story?
Oh my
quick
gosh.
Tie-in. Was sexist. What a flabbergasting thing. Here, John McEnroe is being reasonable. In his book, he says that it was Serena, wasn't it? Serena or
yes.
Venus, one of the Williams
yes.
sisters. He's so appreciative of these girls, actually. He says she is the best women's player ever. He's actually hawking a book that explains that she is the best, no doubt. And then the interviewer asks him, well, why did you say best woman? And he's flabbergasted by it. He's taken aback by it. If you watch the video, he's like, what? What are you talking
Williams.
About? And then he just answers honestly, because she wouldn't be the best man. I mean, there's hundreds of men that could beat Serena Williams. And he's all of a sudden he's sexist. This is just a fact of life, ladies and gentlemen.
He just paid an amazing compliment. This is what I can't, literally, his words, best female player ever. No question.
No question.
Let's just sit in it and appreciate it.
Instead,
Serena Williams is supposed to be upset because she's the greatest female tennis player who's ever lived.
It's in one of those denial of reality things that just makes you want to pull your hair out. Like, we're living in an age where the emperor has no clothes and everyone is just, yay, good job, emperor. And somebody's got to, come on now.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, and her sport was female tennis, women's tennis.
Well, and have you ever watched tennis? I mean, this is not close. I'm sorry. There are hundreds of men. She's great.
Right.
But it's just a simple fact. It's called biology. Bigger, stronger people on the tennis court will beat smaller, less strong. And she's great. She's the best. Don't, right? Anyway, all that back to your, to send a female out on the front lines with a bunch of Marines, mm-hmm. I think is foolhardy for this very reason, well, that they're different.
They're different, and it's putting men and women into greater peril.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're even looking at mixing women into infantry right now.
Yeah, which is nonsense.
And what's happening, though, is that you're then appealing to the masculine nature, to men who tend to have this development of being gentlemen and tend to have this thought to protect women. Now you're saying, I have to fight side by side with you, and I can't have a preferential treatment of trying to protect you. You know what it makes me think of? I'm getting ready to go to a baseball game. Makes me think of that baseball game last year. It was a picture that went viral where this ball comes flying out into the stands. Kid's not paying attention. I think he was on his phone or something. I don't know. He's not paying attention. And the ball's about to nail this kid in the face. Dad just puts his arm out to protect the kid. The dad is the one who's reaching out. Some of the other dads, you can tell, are aware, kind of looking, hey, yeah. I need to protect, defend. Do you know what the women are doing? And I'm not downplaying women. Women are ducking, covering their heads. There's this recognition that it's a difference between the sexes, and you're appealing to that nature in a different way when you're throwing men and women side by side in combat.
Yeah. But it's, again, it's the denial of reality that to me has a spiritual component to it. Like, at the bottom line, what are we doing with all of this gender stuff? We're basically denying there is such a thing as gender. It is a denial of God and the way he created the universe. That's the bottom line. Like, it's because the gender thing is so close to what it is to be made in the image of God, right? Because it's so great that to deny it is so bad.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
You know, regarding a draft for women, luckily it's been shelved. We'll see it come up again, I'm sure. But here's the deal. I know a lot of men in particular and women who say, hey, women are fighting so hard for so-called equality to the extent that they're saying there's no difference between men and women. Fine. Let them have the draft. Sure, go ahead. Let them go and fight if another draft comes up. But I'm sure it will at some point in our country. And I finally had to look at some of the people who are saying this, who are people like you and I agree there's a difference between men and women, but are kind of saying, hey, let them receive their punishment in a sense for insisting on this. But here's the deal. And I had to look at someone recently. I said, okay, you have a little girl and there's a strong likelihood 15, 20 years from now, there's a draft. And I said, she is now in combat.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he stopped. And I've talked to a lot of men about this recently. They go, oh no, I'm not okay with that. I said, so you make it personal. You recognize that there's a difference between men and women. Yeah. I said, do you have a problem with your son being drafted? Absolutely not. I think it's good for them to, you know, be in the military and so forth. So, you know, for those people who are saying, hey, let's just put up our hands, no big deal on a lot of these things, it has consequences and impacts different people.
Yeah, you talked about the women's movement and, well, we're just going to give them the consequences of their desires, that they want to be treated equally. I mean, I don't think that they wanted to be treated exactly the same as men, right? Like, right. That's the problem. That's what the women's movement has become, unfortunately. At the beginning, yes, let's treat you justly. Let's treat you appropriately, fairly. Let's not treat you unequally in the sense that you're getting less pay for the same work, all that stuff. Of course, let's be just. But that does not mean we have to treat everyone as if we are all the same, because all that does is deny that there is such a thing as a woman.
Right.
And is that what you're after? I mean, right. We want to deny that there is such a thing as femininity, as womanhood.
Right.
No, I don't think that's where you want to go.
I'm going to get myself in trouble here for probably saying this. So you brought up equal pay, and this is one of those that just drives me crazy that people sometimes get so upset over this. Yes, there are certainly circumstances where there have been grave injustices done with regard to what men versus women are making and so forth. But the reality is, when we're looking looking at the wage gap. A lot of the time people get so upset, but they're ignoring the fact that women, unlike men, enter in and out of the workforce. They often go 15, 20 years staying out, or they choose to work part-time, or they choose to work in more vocational areas of work that often just make less to begin with. And so a lot of the time when we talk about this huge gap and the wage gap for men and women, we're not taking these elements into consideration. So I brought this up not too long ago at a talk because it was asked during a Q&A when I was giving a presentation on gender. And of course, someone wanted to talk about the wage gap. And I said, the reality is sure, there is a wage gap. It's real. But there are also differences between men and women and how we live our lives. I walked through this girl started crying in the audience. And she stood up and she's weeping and she's arguing with me about the differences in the wage gap. And I'm just sitting here going, I'm really sorry this is upsetting you. You know, this is definitely something that's real, but for the most part, there are a lot of laws put into place to make sure that there is not discrimination against women in these cases. And if anything, it's not reported on when it's happening sometimes.
See, you did a lot better at that than I would have, because you...
I laughed after.
Well, and it's hard not to, and I agree with you. I think there have been historical injustices done to women. Let's not discount that, and they've been fired for reasons they shouldn't. I mean, yes, the current wage gap, I think, is, you've explained it well. I think the current quote wage gap, you know, cynically, I would almost look at a situation like that where your talk made the girl cry. And cynically, I want to say, all right, for all of you who think there's not a difference between how men and women
interact. The stink that women put up about,
well, or just, you know, crying, right? Like, my talk shouldn't cause you to cry. And if it does, maybe.
Oh, it was a great cue. And I finally had to look at everyone and go, am I not making sense here? Because this was a very business oriented area where I was presenting. And I said, does this make sense? Are there any more questions about the wage gap? And the girl wanted to keep talking. She kept raising her hand. I said, are you just upset? Do you have anything to say? It was a tough one.
Oh, man. All right. Here's another tough one, Timory. A little story that you brought up. Request from a listener, I think, about financial planning.
Yes.
So you're going to have to lead on this, because I'll admit, Dave Ramsey is the guy who does a lot of the financial. Dave would look at my life and just say, Don, he would just shake his head with a lot of And some of it I agree with. Some of it I'm like, well, that's my life, Dave. Tell me what's his general take in this request from the listener?
Well, you know, Don, I think you're not alone. If there's this video that came up and a listener kept saying, hey, can you cover financial planning? And for me, you know, I'm in my mid-20s. This is something, you know, I'm living. I'm not married or anything. I have to kind of make a little bit of a plan, you know?
Sure.
I need to be aware. And I'm also essentially working as a missionary and part-time. I teach Pilates as well. I love working with my clients. But, you know, especially working in the nonprofit world or having a family, whatever it may be, we have to plan. And so a lot of young people have been writing in saying, hey, talk about financial planning. And what's great is that there is a religious spin on this, but I want to start by looking at David Ramsey's video. It's basically 7 baby steps for super saving. And he starts by asking this question. And the question is essentially, if you needed $5,000 right now, do you have it? Person after person, no. No way, no. So then the next question, could you get it? Oh yeah, no problem. I could find it. And everyone kind of says, I don't have it, but I'd somehow get it. And in some sense, he's pointing out, well, this isn't necessarily realistic, or you're kind of kicking yourself in the foot. You're just going to pull it out of the equity in your house or whatever it might be. So it starts this conversation of what are the 7 baby steps to get you into a more secure place with your finances.
Right. And I'll admit, I did not watch the whole hour video, but I'm somewhat familiar with Dave's stuff. And in approaching this whole topic, it's very biblical to save and to be wise with your money. I'm always want to throw out a caveat, like, as long as you approach the whole topic of money as if money is not controlling you and money is not ultimately what you're placing your trust in.
Absolutely.
And so I sort of want to preface this conversation with that. I get the sense that some people equate being a wise financial planner with being a strong Christian or whatever, or good Catholic. Like, if you're bad with your money, you're being, well, okay. I'm not sure we can equate that, because God's going to call some people, I believe, to situations where you're just not making as much money. Mm-hmm. We're not making a ton of money here today, doing our volunteer work on the radio. Does that mean we're being bad stewards of our money or our time? Well, I don't think so, right? Are we saving anything right this moment? Not really. But are we seeking first the kingdom of God? I would argue, yes, we are. And so from a certain perspective, I think some people could look at you and I putting our time and money on a holiday right now into something where financially it actually looks kind of bleak.
Right.
And say, well, is that wise? Shouldn't you be doing something else? And
I would say, a lot of people don't understand why.
I would say, yeah, because ultimately my security is in God. And if I'm doing what he wants me to do, things are going to work out. That's just a preface to the whole conversation.
Absolutely.
Am I saying you shouldn't be good stewards? No, you should be good stewards of your money. But I just think some people get a little bit hard and fast on this stuff where you're like, oh, if you're ever, you know, took out a loan, then that's, you know, and I'm like, well,
I think
that
people
sure
can be
that.
Judgmental about
yeah.
it. Absolutely. And I think that that's why these seven principles are to help us in directing and planning and having a good groundwork. It doesn't necessarily get into all the other elements. And you brought this up to start is we as Catholics, as Christians, are called to talk about being a good stewards of God's providence. It's providential that we are here working on the radio and that we're called to do our best in how we interact, what we share. We're called to share God's truth, his teachings of the church. We're not called to teach things that aren't consistent with the faith. Well, similar to our responsibility with the radio or whatever your job might be, if you have a client, your responsibility to care for and love that client. Well, same thing to be responsible with what we have, whether it's our home, our apartment we're renting, our cars that we're paying off, whatever it might be, we're called to be good stewards. And this enters into the area of virtue for us.
Absolutely. And really, money is quite indicative of where your heart is. I mean, Jesus
right.
was very clear about this. Look at where your money is. That's where your heart is. And so what you do with your money and how good of a steward you are of it, of course, is indicative of our spiritual walk. And so,
right.
yeah, you're absolutely right. Like what we do with the gifts, whether it's your gifts of the intellect or whatever, right? Your gifts of Pilates training or dancing, you want to use those gifts for God's glory. Well, if God's given you money, of course, you want to use those for his glory. And looking at then how we use that money, of course, is a good picture.
Right. And ultimately, whether we like this or not, I have a good friend who is a PhD economist, and she said, Timory, money is what makes the world go round. Even if you're working in nonprofit ministry work, you have to be making your money. And it reminded me at the same time of bringing in that conversation of being good stewards. We read in Psalm 24 verses 1 through 2, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein. When I read that and put it into conversation with the responsibility of money, we recognize everything we have. Monetarily, our assets, our phones, our computers, these aren't ultimately ours. And putting that into context, if we can see, especially those people who maybe consecrate themselves to the Blessed Virgin Mary, they have this attitude of everything is mine, given to Our Lady at the feet of our Lord. And when you have that perspective, it alters how you then interact with your finances, which we'll come back to walking through those seven steps.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
So getting into these seven steps, the first one, I think that this is actually the easiest if we're disciplined about it. And you can even think of it as a growth in self-control and virtue is, and super saving is to get $1,000 in the bank, even easier than you'd think. He says you can usually do this in about a month, a little longer if you have to. But if you make under $20,000, he said, instead of $1,000, get $500 in the bank that you just don't touch. You have it there.
You just leave it. You don't touch it.
You just leave it. $1,000. Think about how often all of a sudden, oh, I got into a little car accident. Oh, this happened. Whatever it might be, you need that little bit of extra cash that's there that you don't immediately jump to. It's entering into that backup emergency.
Right. Now, the mindset, it seems to me here, would be that I'm going to have to cut certain things out of my life or not add certain things if I'm going to keep that money there, right? I mean,
right.
It seems to me that there are certain things in life that take our monthly bills, cable, cell phone, power, mm-hmm. all of the things. And if you simply can't do that, then it's to get the 500. That means that you are living beyond your means, right? That Dave
exactly.
Ramsey would say.
Because realistically, we can find $20 somewhere. Whether it's, you know, I'm not buying that t-shirt that I really like that I forgot to take with me when I went somewhere, but I really do have a tank top I could wear. Maybe not look as I'd like to. And I know this is a silly example, but we start to...
Well, that's not a silly example. I think that's a great example,
yeah.
actually. It's generally stuff like the t-shirt and the coffee and the little things where if you actually are just trying to get that $20 or whatever,
right.
Where am I going to find that? Yeah.
Or, hey, I'm not going to eat out at all week, even if that means that I'm going to be away from my house for 6 hours and I'm just going to have nuts in my purse for that period of time. But guess what? It's saving me like $15 just not going out and having that one meal on the road.
Right. Okay, so that's a great one. Just keep $500 or $1,000 in the bank and keep it there to show that you can almost.
Yes. And I think that it's a sense of self-control that enters
that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
The next one is the debt snowball, especially for those people with student loans right now, or maybe you're paying off a house. Maybe you have a car loan, whatever it might be. Attitude is, so you have the amount that you're going to pay off your loans. Let's say you have two or three loans. The attitude with the debt snowball is, let's have this dedicated amount of meeting our basic requirements for what those loan payments are. And then see what you can pay just over that amount. Then you look at the different, there are two ways to do this. Then you look at the interest rates on all of your different debts. The one with the higher interest, you could dedicate a surplus of your money to that higher interest one. And so say I'm dedicating $900 a month to my loan, say $200 are student loans, $300 car, whatever it is. I put the surplus and the one with the higher interest rate. And then once I finish paying off the one with the higher interest rate, I still keep that same amount of money that I was paying in total to all my debts, but now start throwing it at the next thing that has the highest interest rate. And you have the snowball effect of the money filtering through. However, I will throw this out there. Some people need a peace of mind attitude. So some people dedicate the higher amount to the loan that's the smallest so that they can feel accomplished and having paid something.
Oh,
off.
Sure. It's nice to get that one card paid off or whatever, and then you can move on to the next
right.
one. Yeah, that makes sense as well.
Yes.
Yeah, debt's a killer, I think. Again, I'm not one of those guys who says that you should never, ever go into debt. At least in my experience, sometimes it just works out that way. But yes, if you can at all avoid it or get out of it, that's
right.
the first thing you need to do.
And I personally have student loans.
Yeah, I do too.
A huge burden.
And it is a burden.
A lot of my friends who have student loans, let me tell you, it is a real struggle, especially if you're choosing to do ministry work at the same time. I mean, I have to live focusing and responsibly on those loans and live by them. And so if you're maybe getting ready to go to school or considering, find creative ways. Maybe you transfer after studying at a, you know, local college for a couple of years.
I think that's really, really good advice. Yeah, the prestige of going to that $60,000 a year school or whatever is not going to sound that good when you're $150,000 in debt after that. So mm-hmm. I agree, Timory. It's think carefully about your college choices, and if you can reduce your debt or not get into debt, oh man, it's going
right.
to free you up a ton after you're done school.
Right. And maybe you work part-time and you take a smaller amount of loans out. Or for me, I did my grad school program, didn't really take any student loans out, and I worked probably more than I should have, but a little more than 40 hours a week when I was in grad school, and finished my master's in about a year.
Wow.
I mean, that was more than full-time in both. nearly killed me,
yeah.
but I didn't take out more debt.
Yeah.
And that was important to me at the time.
That's huge, huge. Very important advice.
Number three, emergency fund, 3 to 6 months of income saved. This is a tough one.
Yeah. I'm not going to claim that I have been able to do this.
But think about how helpful it would have been, especially you having a family in different circumstances, having that backup.
Yeah, it's nice. Again, it seems to me they build on each other. If you have the ability to save that $1,000, you can keep doing that and mm-hmm. saving more and more. And again, as long as you're not being miserly about it. And there's a difference between being so focused on money.
Right.
And I suspect we all know these people. I know them that they're so concerned over money that they're unwilling to pay that extra $1 or
right.
what. Right? I mean,
yes.
At some level, this can get too crazy where you're so focused on money that you've lost perspective on living life and just being a regular person and doing what God wants you to do. On the other hand, if you have no perspective on money and you're mm-hmm. just have no idea where all the money's going and you're spending it willy-nilly and there's no priorities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So yes, if you can get that emergency fund, 3 to 6 months, obviously that's going to be a good thing. Self-control is another one of the big deals there.
Well, and I think it begins to bring you a little bit of peace in knowing, let's say I lose my job, or let's say you work in sales. Let's say you have a period of a dry time as well. This is something, you know, my mom sold real estate. And so she would always have to plan, you know, a lot of the time, that November, December period of time, everyone's not really looking for houses during this period. I have to plan accordingly. And for me, throwing this out there, you talked about how we can overly be focused maybe on the money or even saving sometimes. And I see what you're saying. I think most people have a huge lack of self-control.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that's not good.
Right.
It's not the issue, except when it is, when money is the thing, right? Like putting your trust in riches
right.
is a big, big problem.
Yes. And that's where we see, you know, it's not the love of money is the problem, not money itself.
Right. Like you talked about just having that peace of mind that there's 3 to 6 months in the bank or whatever. Certainly that is true, right? Like certainly. And if you're, you know, looking ahead to relationships or maybe you're in one, you know that money can be a big problem in relationships. Like a lot of times the two people don't look at money the same or the money problems cause a huge rift. And hey, we don't have that security in the bank. And now this is causing stress in our relationships. That can be a big, big problem.
That's one of the biggest struggles that marriages have often, which is why I think it's good, especially if you're younger, not married yet, or maybe you're newly married, whatever it might be, to try to plan now to have that plan and communicate on the same terms.
Right. And then on the other hand, though, not putting your trust in riches means that God is ultimately your security and that just having money does not necessarily take stress away. And you don't have to look very far. Just look at any rich person and see their level of stress to know that, again, if God's not the center of this, all of this money advice is going to go for naught. That's
right.
All. I guess that's all. I just want to keep reminding
Absolutely.
You of that, right? Like, we're not saying that this is going to be a key to happiness.
Yes.
And it's going to bring you peace to have all that money. No, yes, it will feel good to get out of debt and have no doubt. No, I'm just saying
right.
that ultimately God's your security and, you know, 3 to 6 months of income can come and go like that. Like money is very flighty. Money
right.
can come and go very
well,
quickly.
Well, I think this is where having a plan and working your plan, but also being flexible is so important. I know for me personally, I use the budgeting app on the iPhone. I'm sure they have it on Android and other phones as well, called Mint. And you can set your budget for all of your different categories. So for those people who maybe don't do the envelope thing where you go, okay, I have $200 for groceries this week. I have $20 for
fun. Which is great if you can do that with cash and an envelope. Good idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
I personally, I'm nervous to carry that money around. I use Mint and I make sure that it's constantly updated. I'm watching. So I see, okay, I've spent this much. I only have, and I do this in particular. I know I can't be so focused on saving everything that I don't allow myself to go to a movie or enjoy
exactly.
something now and
yeah.
again. And so that's why I personally budget and I know I have X so much amount, might be small, but this is what I have to enjoy doing some different things. It might even include picking up a book or two that month. You know, things like that.
That's it. See, now this is a good point, because having a bunch of money can be a stress reliever, but it can also increase your stress if, for example, you're in a relationship and you and your loved one have not been to the movies in 5 years. I know couples like this. Like, we were so focused on getting that house that we ate rice and beans for five straight years, but gosh darn it, we got that house. And I'm just like, I've never been in that place. I'm like, no, I'm not going to put me and my wife and my kids through that.
Misery. We've got to live still.
I think we do. I don't know.
Well, and this is what it makes me think of. I think of, really quick before we transition here, Jesus in Luke chapter 24, talking about making a plan, essentially. He says, for which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he's laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this is a man to build and was not able to finish. You know, you've got to have a plan. And sometimes that plan is, how much do I have for that free time? How much do I have for maybe extra dessert with my groceries, whatever it is, but not exceeding it? Because sometimes when we don't have that plan, we then overspend because we never monitored.
Oh, we just don't know. We have no idea where the money's going.
This is Trending with Dawn and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DawnJohnsonMinistries.org or Timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
Talking a little bit about money and how to be wise with what God has given you, be good stewards of our income, and Timmery has been offering us some good advice via Dave Ramsey. I wish I had been better at this, frankly, growing up.
I'm trying really hard. I recognize this is a time for me where I need to.
Yeah, it's good to get those good habits, I think, early on. Like, the earlier you can get into these good habits, the better.
The better, right. To do a really good job with saving their money, investing, building up their wealth, but building it for their families.
Sure.
And continuing to grow and share it and have generational funding for their families for years to come. And so my mom jokes, because I tend to be a little bit of a saver sometimes, you know, very much so. But, you know, now I'm at the point in my life where I go, I might have the attitude, but I need the skills. And there's a big difference between the attitude and the skills.
So that's true. That's
it's something I've been working on. So just number four is invest 15% of your income. He recommends invest in multiple places, not just one place. Maybe you do one part is in silver or gold or whatever it is, like a commodity, and then part of it's in the stock market or in housing, you know, kind of splitting. Don't put all your eggs in one basket in terms of income.
You know, as I'm thinking about this, and I think about all the young adults starting out in our area, and they look at 15% of my income, all of my income goes to rent and food,
right?
Like this. And I get there's a certain sense that, especially when you're growing up and everything's so expensive,
right,
that how do I get in a situation where I have more income than even my basic necessities? And I think we've been talking a little bit about this. Like, a lot of that, we're just going to have to figure out a way where your basic necessities are less. But again, I just want to acknowledge that's not easy in today's market, where all of our cost of living has been increased so high. It's almost like you have to have two incomes or three or seven to even live. I mean,
extra
all these
on
apartments
the
going up around our house, and people, they're wanting like $2,100 for a, you know, studio apartment. And I'm like, who? My wife and I often ask, like, who's moving in there? Like, where are they making their money? How can they afford this? Is there 20 people living in that apartment? How does that work? And so, again, I just want to, you know, you guys are figuring out a way. Awesome. This is good advice. If you can have more income to get that 15%, that's great. I understand it's difficult.
And you're right, because a lot of people are living barely within their means right now. Finding that is really tough. And, you know, someone said to me recently, you just have to bump up your income somehow.
Yeah,
you have to find a way to.
Right.
And for me, it was recognizing I'm so blessed. I have the most incredible clients in Pilates and who I train. For me, it was a matter of really finding where can I add a couple more hours to take more private clients, working through rehab maybe with some of these clients, whatever it might be, to add in the extra time here and there, to add that extra $100 on or whatever it is.
Totally.
Next one's college funding. This is a tough one because a lot of people are struggling with student loans. But if we put a small amount away now, maybe you're new parents or maybe your kids are in the middle of growing up, it can start to prepare you to grow that money for later.
As a little side note, this is sort of like one of my irritants. One of the problems, so we've made all of this student loan money available to students. And basically what that has done is increase the cost of college because the universities have jacked up their prices and built all these new fancy things.
Unethically.
I think so. I agree, Timory. I think that they've taken all of this because students look at that and they say, oh, well, the cost used to be, even just a few years ago, say the cost was $5,000 a year. All right, that's a lot. But I can get a student loan for $5,000 or $6,000 a year. Okay, I'll take it. The college, they don't see that as real money. And the colleges see that as, hey, we're getting this government money. Now we're going to jack up the price to $10,000.
It's horrible.
Oh, there's still government money coming in. Right. Now it's $20,000. Oh, there's still government money. If we cut some of those student government loans out, and I'm a guy who's had loans. Yeah. I'm not against student loans.
There would be less students in those seats in those colleges.
Well, but there'd be less price. It's a bubble.
Right.
The university system is another one of those bubbles, I think. And so it's unfortunate. But so now we're in the, you know, if you've got parents trying to save, all of that to say, you know, yes, let's try to save and get some college funding in there. It's irritating to me that as I look ahead to my kids' college, that some of these places are wanting $60,000-$70,000 a year. And you're like, come on, that's ridiculous.
This one, I tend to want to duck whenever my mom has the same frustration. She is very upset about how even a lot of our private universities,
absolutely,
Catholic universities, have jacked up their prices significantly. And she gets very upset. And for me, I can't think too much about my student loans and about the college because it's upsetting. So I always just kind of go, oh man, I need to get out of this conversation because I can't get emotional about my student loans. And I know a lot of other young people who you bring up student loans, there are tears in their eyes. And so that's where I'm like, I duck out of the conversation, but my mom has the same exact frustration as you about this.
Yeah, it's not a moral system, ultimately, unfortunately, I don't think, the way it's set up. Anyway, yes, let's do our best to save up and hope. I'm hoping the college bubble bursts before my kids get there.
Right.
And suddenly,
God willing.
Unfortunately, that's going to cause some... I just look at all of the facilities and all the money that's being poured in, and I know that's just all government loan money, and I don't know. Anyway.
Absolutely. Well, last few really quick after college funding. Pay off your house early. You save, paying less interest. It's something you build equity in your house. I don't think that this one really has to be explained. Do you have any extra? You save money the sooner you pay off
the
debt.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And then finally, build wealth and give a bunch of it away. And he recommends things such as automatic savings each month. This is something I personally do. I know how much, even if it's small, that I can put to savings each month, and I have it automatically moved into my savings account. And what that does is it says, I can't spend that.
Yeah. And then the giving it away.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is a principle, whether it's tithing or just gifts. And again, just look at it. Where is your money going? Like, what is it being put towards? And I would just ask at the conclusion of this then, is it going towards building the kingdom of God?
Right.
And whether that means your family and they're glorifying God in all they do or what. But as long as you can look at the money that's being spent and you can say, yes, I'm happy if God's looking, you know, God looks at my books and says, all right, where's all this being spent? And you're happy with that, right? God, you know, you and Jesus looking over your books, then you're good, right? I think then you're fine. If it comes to the point where, hey, look at how much I've saved.
That's a problem.
And you're going to go show off your bank account to Jesus. And hey, look at me. I've got $2 million in the bank. Haven't I been a good steward? And he's like, well, it's just sitting in the bank doing what? Right? Mm-hmm. Doing nothing? I mean, yes, I guess you haven't wasted the money, but it could have been used for all of this other stuff. Right? Again, it's, listen, I think Ramsey's doing a good job. Again,
that you're
just don't get too caught up in thinking that you're being a good steward if none of it's actually going towards the kingdom. If your life, this is the thing, if your life is going towards the kingdom of God, and you happen to have, you know, accumulated a bit of debt or whatever over the years, I think Jesus is going to be okay with that. Again, if you're being foolish with your money and you're not seeking after the kingdom, but you haven't accumulated a debt, okay, Jesus is not okay with that either, right? Again, be wise with the money, but the whole thing should be about, what does Jesus want me to do with
this? And this is where I think the common good enters in. The attitude of the common good doesn't mean you owe all your money to other people and have to pay for other people's things. It's that common good is we are stewards of God's providence, the gifts that we have been given, and we're called to treat them well, our assets well, care for our houses well, care for our things well, use the money we have for what we have and what we need, save, yes, plan. But here's, you know, that question of, do you work to live or live to work? And you work so that you can live and have what you need. Same thing. Do you save to live, or do you save just for the sake of saving? There's a big difference there. And that's where entering into the attitude of tithing. You know, I'm so blessed. When I was a little kid, my parents would give me an allowance, say it was $5. Right away, 10% had to go to savings, 10% had to go to God and charity. After that, then you have what's left over. But that attitude of knowing what I have ultimately isn't automatically mine for the immediate time I have.
I don't know if you caught this interview with David Carr, NFL quarterback. He just signed, I believe it was the biggest NFL contract ever. And they asked him during the interview, what are you going to do with your money? And I think the first thing he said was, I'm going to eat some Chick-fil-A. But then he went on this rather lengthy discussion. He was so happy because he said, there's a lot of people that are going to be helped in other countries with this money. He's a strong Christian guy, and he gives a lot of his money away. And he was just so excited that he's just signed this huge paycheck, but he was thinking about, where is this money going to help others? And I think that's, whether you're making, you know, $5 an hour or whatever, I guess you can't make $5 an hour anymore, but whether it's that or you're making $100 million a year, whatever David Carr makes, again, it's, where is this money going? What am I doing with it? Is God glorified? Are people, you know, being helped? That's going to be your bottom line.
That's the bottom line. And that's where I think talking about money is important, because it helps us to have perspective, self-control, a plan, be charitable, all these elements, so that we can live and focus on the kingdom rather sometimes than getting stuck in a lack of self-control. Or, you know, and there is a lot of suffering where money is concerned. And so sometimes having that plan helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
This has been Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.